Welcome to the Nutritional Revolution Podcast. I'm your host, Kyla Chanel. I'm a performance nutritionist specializing in sex differences in sport. I work with athletes from all over the world through my online private practice and sports nutrition programs. We here at Nutritional Revolution are here to cut through the BS promoted in the media and give you the science, literally straight from the research articles, as well as share client success stories and experiences around nutrition and racing. Please keep in mind, this podcast is created strictly for educational purposes only and should never be used as a replacement for medical diagnosis and treatment. If you like what you hear today, we would love for you to subscribe and share. How many carbs should I eat before my workout? How much protein do I need post-workout? Why do I struggle with so many GI issues during my training sessions? If you've ever thought about any of these questions, you're not alone. One of the major aspects of our job as sports nutritionists is to educate our clients on how to properly fuel their bodies before, during, and after their workouts. That's why we created SNEP, short for Sports Nutrition Education Program. This is a four-week-long program that breaks down the latest research in sports nutrition and includes calculators to help you figure out how much you need to fuel your body. We've also included some great resources, including suggested foods and recipes that won't upset your GI system. To learn more about SNEP, click the link in our show notes and be sure to use the code NEWNR10 at checkout to save 10% off this program and any other product on our website. That's NEWNR10 for a 10% discount. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Nutritional Revolution Podcast. Today, we have for you guys Rachel Norfleet. She is a dynamic trail runner and mom based in Bozeman, Montana, where she loves to ski, hike, run, hunt with her husband and two-year-old son, Callum. Growing up in the Midwest, she swam competitively into college, and then after graduation, she found triathlon, where she raced at a high level for 5 years, competing 3 times in world champ races. Then in 2018, she took a hiatus from sport for almost 2 years after experiencing a thyroid storm, as she calls it, that turned her life and health upside down. During this time of healing, she moved to Southern California, where she fell in love with trails, hiking, and eventually trail running, carrying that passion through her pregnancy with her son and eventually getting into trail racing more seriously beginning in 2022. After a successful career in the neurosurgical medical device industry, she is setting up to pursue her nursing degree in 2024 while she nurtures as much family together time outside as possible. We're excited for you guys to listen to this episode. It was a great talk. Enjoy. All right. We have Rachel Norfleet here for you guys. Thank you so much for joining us today. She's tuning in from Bozeman, Montana, right?
Correct. Yes.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for your time and hopping on. As most of our listeners know, they got the brief bio before hopping on here. But we're going to go into our two truths and a lie and hopefully before we reveal the truth or the lie from your background. So go ahead and break those down for us, Rachel.
Okay. So my two truths and a lie, I am a second degree black belt.
Oh.
Uphill running is my favorite.
Okay.
And pickle juice is my aid station must have.
Oh, okay. If that's true, I'm on your level.
You're a pickle juice girl.
Yeah. My dad used to have me drink pickle juice when I would play basketball in like middle school and high school. Cause I mean, goodness, back then there wasn't really like anything outside of Gatorade as an electrolyte. And so he was like, this helps with your cramping. And he used to have me drink pickle juice. And I guess I grew to love it a little bit. Yes. Weird things you find out. So, okay. Which one do we think is the lie? I mean,
they're hard.
Yeah. Second degree black belt. I don't really know what second degree means when it comes. I didn't know there's different degrees of black belt. So my mind thinks that might be a lie. I could see like, cause we've been following your Instagram forever and you're like up in the mountains all the time. So I feel like you must love running up there. Surely you need a lot of salt at altitude, pickle juice. What do you think, Amanda?
Yeah, I was going to say, ultra runners love uphill running. So I feel like I also like downhill. Maybe it's like she's the full-fledged first degree black belt.
Yeah.
Is this in jujitsu or karate? Yeah, what is this in?
We'll just leave it as a blanket statement. We'll leave it
Okay.
ambiguous.
I'm gonna go the black belt. I feel like there's probably some truth nugget in there.
Yeah. Okay, that's all. I'll go with you as well, Amanda. But don't tell us the answer, Rachel. We will reveal it for the listeners at the end.
Sure.
And then it might be revealed, you know, shortly through our background here. But tell us a little bit about kind of your background. What got you into endurance-based sports? And kind of going from, I believe it was like triathlon first, and then into more ultra running. So share that journey with us.
Yeah, so I grew up swimming my whole life, and I actually tried to go out for cross country one year and got a stress fracture.
Oh,
And
shoot.
at that point, just thought I'm not meant to run and went back to swimming, swam in college for a year. And then as I was pursuing my school path, I ended up transferring schools. And with that, I lost this sport that I had loved my whole life. And I didn't quite know what to do with myself, but my sister really encouraged me to train for a half marathon. And at that point, I had trained in college, doing a lot of lifting, and we ran more. And so I kind of got over this narrative that I can't run because I knew at that point that I could. So I did this half marathon with her. And then later, I was nannying for a mom and going to school. And she was not only a psychiatrist, but she was a triathlete, and she could see this kind of personal identity crisis unfolding in me, not having my sport anymore. And she knew that I had run this half marathon, and so she encouraged me to get a bike. And she ended up hiring my brother to watch her boys, and we would go bike ride together. And she taught me how to ride in a group and encouraged me to sign up for a triathlon. So then I deep dove into that. So two really
Awesome.
cool, influential women in my life got me into endurance sports.
That's amazing. Wow. And with triathlon, tell us a little bit about that journey. Believe you've raced in quite a few, gone to some maybe world champs, I believe I heard.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun in triathlon. I don't race it anymore, unfortunately, but
Yeah.
from like 2014 to 2018, I raced a ton of fulls and halves.
Yeah.
I found some pretty quick success. I qualified for Kona at my first full Ironman, which was pretty cool,
Wow.
and qualified for the 70.3 World Champs. And yeah, I just had a lot of fun racing for about 4 or 5 years there.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And what was kind of that turning point, kind of moving away from triathlon?
Yeah, so my turning point was in 2018. A couple of things happened that year. So, you know, finding that quick success in 2015, qualifying for Kona, you know, my first Ironman, you know, I was so eager to learn everything about this new sport that I loved and just really was trying to push myself. And moving into 2018, a few things happened. So the first being that I was accepted onto this Zwift Academy team, which is a very well-funded and highly supported amateur development team. So I think that put a little bit of pressure on me to perform that year. And then the second thing that happened was that I secured my second world championship slot and graduated from college both in May of that year.
Wow.
So most people would, you know, shift to looking for their first full-time job. And I was kind of like, well, I'm on this cool team. I have really great support. I can keep working my part-time jobs right now and just really try to give Kona a good effort and then shift my focus to joining the real world after that. So I had what I thought was this cool runway and I took advantage of it. So like June, July of that year, I was training probably upwards of 25 to 30 hours a week, which was quite an uptick from what I was doing
Wow.
previously. And moving into August, I just was noticing that I had an energy shift and I felt tired. My mental health started taking a hit and some of my sessions weren't going great. But all of these things I could reason with because when you're training a lot, you're tired. And when you're, you know, putting pressure on yourself to perform because you're on this team, you know, your mental health can take a hit. And then sometimes your sessions just don't go great because that's how endurance racing is, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, on top of this, for years, I was on birth control and
just did not have a period and a lot of thoughts on that. I'm no longer on birth control, but all of this to say, I never thought that there was reds at play. But moving into, September and October of that year, I was feeling more workouts, feeling more tired. I was sleeping a lot, and I stepped on a scale that month to find that I was 13 pounds lighter than I previously felt really healthy and strong racing at. So yeah, I mean, like a 9% body decrease. So it was pretty jarring. And at that point, I knew that there was something going on, but I told myself I thought it was just thyroid related. And I had been diagnosed when I was 12 with Graves and Hashimoto's, which I think less than 2% of the population have both in conjunction. So I just was one of the lucky ones. And so I was no stranger to dealing with ups and downs with that. And I told myself, probably, I need to get this checked out, but let's just get through this. And we'll look into it after Kona. So I guess the ironic part of that is that I never got through Kona. I DNF'd at mile 12 of the run, which was a
Shoot.
bummer. And at the time, we thought it was a nutritional DNF, but we later found out that I was in the midst of a thyroid storm. So that kind of gave all endurance sport, exercise, everything a huge pause in my life. So I had to, kind of dial back and figure out what was going on before I could regroup and revisit endurance sports again.
Can you, for our listeners, explain what Graves is and then what Hashimoto's is?
Yeah, there are two autoimmune disorders, meaning that your body is attacking itself. And unfortunately, they kind of make your body angry in inverse ways. And so it's this really delicate balance of keeping your hormones in a happy place when you have both, because they're kind of fighting against each other. So what that means for my life is that I just get labs drawn every 6 weeks. I've been on medication at different points in my life. I've been off of medication, but it's just kind of a tricky balance of keeping me in homeostasis.
And when you kind of got to that maybe like lower point, you mentioned the thyroid storm. You got labs done. What was going on from a thyroid perspective at that time? Do you recall?
I can't recall, my exact levels or anything, but essentially, so I DNF'd at Kona in October, and I knew at that point something was going on and I needed help. But I think that oftentimes, even when we know we need help, it's hard to seek that because, as high performing people, we don't want to admit that there's something wrong and that we can't fix the problem at hand. So I let this ride for longer than I should have. The initial like soreness after an Ironman that goes away after, a day or two lasted for about a month. And
Oh my gosh.
yeah, and I was exhausted and I wasn't trying to train or anything. So as, November, December progressed, it got to a point where I was sleeping 18 hours a day and had to quit my part-time jobs. A resting heart rate was 130, and I had a tremor and floaters in my vision. So, I mean, it was really, really bad.
My goodness.
So, I forget what my labs looked like, but that's physically how it was presenting. Yeah, it was a bummer. And, I finally went in December, and they were like, "You are really sick. This is going to take a lot of time to undo the damage that's been done here." And not seeking help only furthered that. So, I talk about this. This is specific to me and having these autoimmune issues. But so not everyone who experiences a state of reds necessarily will have these problems. But I think it's important to, know the signs of reds and to, just be in tune with that, because even if you don't end up in a thyroid storm like I did, it can just wreak havoc on your body. And it's just, the short term and the long term, it's just not worth it to overstress your body in those ways.
So what did that recovery and like returning to
like quote unquote optimal health? What was that journey like? What were the, like, obviously a lot of rest. Was there like thyroid medication, or did you meet with like sports nutritionists or any of that stuff? What was that process like?
Yeah, I worked with an endocrinologist in Kansas City, and I was on a bunch of anti-thyroid medication, like max dose, beta blocker, and I was on that for maybe 6 months.
Wow.
And in that time, I moved out to California. I took my first job out there, and I found the most lovely woman. She's an endocrinologist, but she definitely leans more on like the functional side of medicine. And this is kind of a funny aside story I'll tell you. So when I looked her up, I thought she was at this hospital, and I pull up and it says, you're 500 feet from your destination. I'm like, I thought it was here. And it was this little house across the street from the hospital. And she had renovated it into her own little clinic. And you go in,
Wow.
and it feels like your grandma's house. Like there's wallpaper and a chandelier and like funky furniture. And she comes out with this floppy hat with feathers on it and a red dress with a lab coat and like leopard booty high heels.
Oh
And
my gosh.
yeah, I was like, where am I? But she ended up being like just such a saint. She's an endocrinologist that works with women specifically with autoimmune disorders and into
Wow.
menopause and all of that. When I first started working with her, she helped me get off of some of the harsh medications I was on, and we focused on making lifestyle adaptations. She was the first person that ever asked me about my sleep and stress and my diet, which are huge things that I feel like traditional medicine just was failing me in that respect.
The basics, it's getting back to those basics. I just get like, phew. Goodness. So with kind of the lifestyle changes, was she talking about like setting up different sleep habits that you like than what you were currently doing, or like changes to your diet quality, or what were some of the bigger changes that you remember making then based off those things?
She wanted me to focus on getting 8 hours of sleep every night, which, as an endurance athlete and working a full-time job, you're trying to wake up at 5 and go to bed at 11. And, so I was constantly not giving myself enough rest. So that was one huge thing that changed. And next to that, just kind of having a better view of stress on my body, whether it be training or work or emotions, just recognizing that these all are stressful to your body. So even if you have a day that, you have zero training, but a lot of other stress, you need to recognize that. So she helped me with that. We also eliminated gluten, which there's marginal research on it affecting thyroid peroxidase antibodies. And unfortunately for me, it helped a lot. So I've stuck to it. And then we've just done different vitamins. I take like selenium and vitamin D, things like that. So those are the major things.
And then where in that process, like, were you able to, you mentioned you're not on birth control anymore. Were you able to get your menstrual cycle back through that process as well?
I was off of all forms of birth control for a while and was just doing like the natural family planning, taking your body temperature every day, which is such a great method. I feel like for the first time, I was tuning into my cues as a woman that I've never paid attention to before. And I have an Oura ring now, which makes that process even more seamless. And I highly recommend anyone, I'm not sponsored by them, but it's been a phenomenal tool. So I use
That's
that
great.
now. Got my menstrual cycle back, and she helped us get pregnant. So,
Oh, yay. And that's Callum, right? Little Callum. Oh, that's awesome.
Oh, he just turned to you.
Oh, is he going into the terrible twos at all, or being saying no a lot, or is he being pretty good?
I feel like the terrible twos are just a myth because he's the coolest person I've ever met.
Oh.
And there's a ton of no, but it's just them learning their autonomy and him having opinions. And I just think it's so fun.
That's awesome. Yay. Well, congratulations on all of that. That's incredible. I love hearing that stuff. So, I mean, with that process, kind of talking about the jumping back a little bit to realizing maybe later in time, oh, I was experiencing REDS. Symptomology wise, I mean, you mentioned you were really fatigued. Maybe recovery was lasting a long time. At the time, you didn't know you didn't have your cycle because you were on birth control, right? And then with that, hopping on the scale and, oh my goodness, I'm down 13 pounds from where I was, I don't know, X months ago. That was a process where it was not intentional weight loss, correct? It was
correct.
Yeah.
You know, it's, I say correct, and I'm going to give it a caveat. It is correct. I was not intentional in trying to lose that weight, but I also think in the back of my mind as an endurance athlete, trying to perform at the highest level, you have this voice telling you that you need to be as light and as strong as possible. And I definitely remember doing some like intermittent fasting in that time, and just things that I reflect on now that I would never do that again. And I remember, I feel like I was transitioning back to meat at that point, but I was a very strict vegetarian for a few years. So I also feel that I wasn't maybe just getting enough protein and calories in general. I mean, you have to use so much volume to, you know, adequately supply the energy that you're burning.
It is wild. Goodness. I mean, so many of our endurance athletes, when they first come to us, if we do a nutrient analysis, it's like they're almost all under fueling and really just from carbs. Like they're really missing the mark on carbs. And I think there's just a fear, like a society fear around carbs that's still lingering. But so with kind of the recovery and healing journey, how long did that take before you felt like you were kind of back to yourself again, or felt comfortable maybe like increasing your training volume or putting a race on the calendar? Like, how long was that process?
Yeah. So Kona was 2018, October of 2018. And I don't really feel that I felt like myself or could really call what I was doing training at any point until probably like mid to late 2020.
Okay.
I had signed up for one race in 2020, and I think it got canceled with COVID. I don't even remember.
Oh, yeah.
That was in, but definitely, I mean, it took time. It took, a year and a half.
Yeah.
So, and then about the time that I really was feeling like myself, like December of 2020, we got pregnant. So that really changed what training looked like. And that was obviously the goal at that time. So it was wonderful, but
that's great. Did you continue any training through your pregnancy at all?
I did. Yeah. I trail ran while I was pregnant. Got some looks sometimes for that, but did a lot of running, a lot of lifting. I felt like that really felt good when I was pregnant, and I just tried to move every day. I mean,
awesome.
You know, yeah,
that's great. And through that process, through pregnancy and then post-pregnancy at all, did you feel still really strong, or was there ever any of that, goodness, like with an infant and waking up at night and maybe still trying to train, and like, were you ever feeling any of that kind of like thyroid stuff pop up, or like the more than just I have a newborn fatigue come along?
Yeah, I had a wonky period with my hormones after giving birth, and we had a pretty close eye on things. I mean, I worked with maternal fetal medicine and an endocrinologist all the way through. I was high risk, and yeah, so I went through a weird period for a while there. And I think, you know, it's hard when you're breastfeeding and just all these things, your hormones are so wonky. So we worked through a little bit of wonkiness, but for the, I mean, for the most part, I was relatively stable from a thyroid standpoint. I mean, you feel all sorts of like hormone crazy just being, I think, but
Goodness. Well, that's good to hear. And with kind of jumping back to that kind of healing window you were going through, how did your training change through that process, working with the functional or endocrinologist? Was it like no activity whatsoever, or what were the suggestions there, what you felt comfortable doing?
Essentially, she wanted me to do, you know, in that time period, the year and a half ish, 2 year period where I was healing, she just wanted me to do what felt good in a way that wasn't overstressing my body. And, you know, with that, I was kind of like, what does that mean? It's so arbitrary, you know, and, but I kind of figured it out. I mean, there were days where I was like, okay, that was too much or whatever. But, you know, I first just kind of started hiking and doing things that were really gentle and biking. And then I realized like, no, I feel good. Like I could, you know, run 4 miles or, you know, so I just kind of toyed with it for a while until all of a sudden one day I'm like, I'm training again. This is awesome. I'm like, I feel good every day and I have good energy. And yeah, that's what can happen when you're supporting your body in the right ways.
Hey guys, I just want to take a quick break to talk to you guys about our special Leah bundle. So low energy availability bundle, if you guys are not familiar with that term. And unfortunately, we see too many of our clients come to us with this low energy availability state going on. So in this bundle, we give you the education you need to learn about low energy availability and why it can be harmful for your performance and your health, but we'll also give you the tools you need to start restoring your energy balance so that you can perform better in your events, but also to promote longevity so you can continue racing for years to come. If you're interested in the Leah bundle and want to receive 10% off, be sure to check our show notes. All right, let's get back to the show.
Talking about like diet, and that you mentioned like the intermittent fasting, you know, being a period of time or something that you had maybe implemented or thought about doing. What does nutrition look like and diet look like for you now? I mean, you mentioned adding in more meats, it sounds like, but are you, you know, eating something? Do you train in the morning? Do you eat before you train? Like what's a day of Rachel like fueling her body look like?
Yeah. I think the biggest change is I just kind of eat all the time now. And like I always, you know, before I would like train in the morning and skip breakfast or something to that effect. And I never train not fueled now. Yeah. I love to wake up and make like eggs and toast or yogurt granola, or I don't know. I mean, nothing that exciting, but everything is fueled. I love to snack. My husband jokes with me because even before we got pregnant, he's like, you're the perfect mom. You're always carrying like nuts and bananas. And, you know, just my thyroid doctor told me like, you need to. So anyway, I snack and, you know, following a training session, I just try to make sure that I'm getting the fuel just rolls all day long, you know, refueling during the exercise and after. And I think I was missing those three components before. I would mess up one or two of those and it just, you know, had roll down effects. And now I just try to really fuel my whole day.
I love that. I think that's wonderful. And talking about all these snacks, what you mentioned nuts, what are your go-to kind of like, what snacks are in your purse or your gym bag, or what do you got on hand most of the time?
Oh, I love snacks. Just like day-to-day snacks. I always have like nuts, fruit, fig bars are great. Just kind of quick burning fuel before a run. You know, maybe I ate a meal, but it was an hour and a half ago and I need a little something, something. What else? We love to make muffins. My toddler and I, we make a lot of muffins. We have those laying around the house. And yeah, I think that's about it. That's
great.
Yeah.
Also love that you just mentioned a fig bar, even though you ate a meal 90 minutes prior. Cause I think a lot of people are like, well, I ate 3 hours ago. I'm good to go. Like, I don't need anything before I go for this like 21 miler. Like, you know, I think, topping off just before is something we highly encourage our athletes to do. And yeah, with a quick digesting carb source, just like a fig bar is perfect. So I love that you mentioned that. Snacks are crucial here. I get made fun of as well for being a snacker. I told my friends that ABS stands for always be snacking. So
that is so funny. I love that so much.
We were biking just this last weekend and they're like, I don't care if we get lost out here because I know Kyla always has so many snacks. And I was like, I have a few, but snacks are crucial for sure. Gotta keep fueling the machine. So, yeah. So, tell us kind of now after healing, baby, getting into some training you mentioned, what's the training looking like? What are you training for? What's coming down the pipeline?
Yeah, I have, I'm taking my second shot at hobbling 100K in about 3 weeks.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, I'm excited. I did it. It was my first 100K. I did it last year. I love that course. It's a three looped, relatively flat rolling course in the desert. And it's over Halloween weekend. So it's just like one big party. People dress up and it's just so fun. So I'm going to go do that in a couple of weeks.
Awesome. So. And where you said it's in the desert. Is that in like Arizona or where in the desert?
Yeah, sorry, Fountain Hills, Arizona.
Okay, nice. And is that at lower altitude than where you're at?
It is, and so nice to feel that last year. So I live at about 5,000 feet, a little bit lower, and that is probably close to sea level, I would imagine there.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm looking forward to that.
That's great. Yeah, that must feel really nice. That's excellent. So with the training volume that you've been doing and talking about this upcoming race, what's kind of your like go-to training nutrition, fuel, and or hydration that you use during your training right now or that you plan to use for the upcoming race?
Yeah, so I'm not picky as far as brands go necessarily, but what I've found, you know this, nutrition is so situationally dependent. I might not have said that the right way, but you know what I mean. I mean, like Catalina is going to be very hot and it's a relatively shorter race. I mean, under 10 hours. So I can get away with doing mostly liquid calories or like very liquidy gels. I might toss in a banana. So some things I love the Precision Fuel gels, those 90 grams of carb an hour gels. It's like a 3-in-1 pouch. I love those. I like their hydration mix because you can't really, doesn't taste like much of anything.
Yeah.
I also like Tailwind and Gnarly. So those are some of my go-tos.
Nice.
And if you're on like a longer mountain adventure and you're doing more stops and more hiking, you can eat more real food. So I bring, PBJs and stuff like that.
Amazing. So with this upcoming race with the, you said it's three laps, do you plan to stop at 8 or can you get handed stuff? Are you carrying everything you need the whole time on you?
Yeah. So they have a lot of aid stations. That's the other part of this. So it's a three loop course. And on that loop, I think there are there are 4 aid stations on the loop in total.
Oh, nice. Okay. Yeah.
So you can fill up pretty regularly. Back at the start finish area, everyone has tents, so you can kind of have your personal stuff there. So I'll have a cooler with, Coke, Red Bull, things that maybe, I don't know, they might not have on course that I might be that day. So yeah.
That's great. I love that. And with a race like that, do you do any kind of like intentional carb loading in the days before or the night before? What is that process like leading up to something like that?
Yeah, I feel like I'm just echoing what I've heard everyone else say on your podcast. Like Katie has me. I mean, you want to eliminate fiber. I don't do a lot of fiber in the 2-3 days leading up. And then I don't know if it's so intentional with the carbs. Maybe I need to be more intentional with it, but I think I kind of eat a good amount of carbs all the time.
So yeah, good.
All that much.
Yeah.
But I definitely try to do some like hyperhydration loading. I do. Some good salt in that week for sure leading up to it. So sometimes I do like the liquid IVs or scratch, and I try to do, maybe two of those a day or something.
Yeah. That's great. Goodness. Yeah. I mean, especially if it's going to be hot too, like you're saying. And do you know
recommendations you have, but that's
Yes. I mean, goodness, like you're saying, like it is situational, and then everybody's sweat loss and sweat sodium concentrations are different, right? And in different conditions as well. But yeah, the salty stuff, like we have some people that will do the precision hydration tablets, because they have those three versions of sodium content, liquid IV, Element, like those are all the higher sodium containing stuff to kind of like help increase your sodium. And then like Osmo has a preload product. I think it's like almost 1500 milligrams of sodium. So yeah, there's a variety of different, and Scratch has, I forget what it's called now. It used to be hyperhydration, but it's something else.
Yeah.
And theirs is pretty high. I think almost also 1500 milligrams. So yeah, there's all kinds of good things out there to kind of like help with the fluid loading piece. I think that's perfect for the heat. You got to do that. And you got to, I mean, it's good to always test, of course, as well, is another suggestion we give all our clients, is like always do a race simulation or a quote unquote dress rehearsal with all your nutrition. And then what is your kind of go-to post-race? Do you tend to have an appetite, or do you not have an appetite but try and get stuff in? Do you go grab a pizza and a beer? Like what's your go-to post a race like that?
That's important what you said about like, even if you don't feel hungry, like, do you try to get something in? Because most of the time I am hungry after, but even when I'm not, I try to get it in anyway, because yeah. It's important for, you know, recovery and your muscles and everything. Post-race, I guess it depends. I've definitely done Chipotle burritos before. Mm. That's a big hit. Pizza, usually a beer or like a fizzy water sounds really good immediately.
Yes.
I think that's kind of it. Usually just something like high in fat, some good carb, a little bit of protein in there. That's usually what sounds good.
Yes. Yeah. I love the Chipotle burrito. That's excellent. Contains all the things you need. Let's see, talking about the race itself, being really hot, do you have any specific tactics you use to help cool yourself or control your core temperature in environments like that?
Yeah, I just try to do evaporative cooling all day long. So I actually really love wearing a sun shirt. I get, I'm fair skinned. I get sunburned, and the minute that you're sunburned, I mean, it's just not good for your hydration and everything. So I wear a sun shirt, and it's awesome for the sun protection, but it's also great for evaporative cooling because I just keep that thing wet all day long. That helps to cool me a lot. And then I like having a handheld in my hand. And I know there's maybe some element of palmer cooling happening there. So it kind of heats up pretty quickly in your hand, you know, whatever it is, but mostly evaporative cooling.
And do you wear like is it a fitted shirt or is it loose that you're getting wet?
This year I have like a fitted shirt to get wet.
Yeah. That sounds like it would make more sense. That's great. Those are great tips. Cause I think listeners are always looking for ways to manage that core temperature. Have you ever played around with that core temperature sensor? Do you know what I'm talking about? Have you seen that on your Instagram ads yet? You're going to get it now.
What is it? Describe it to me.
I'm blanking on the name. It might be called Core or Sense or something. It's one of those, but it's like a little white kind of like square device. Maybe Amanda can pull it up. and it sounds like it goes on like almost like a heart rate monitor strap like device. And then it's like on your rib cage and it's like talking to your phone or something, telling you I'm tracking. I had a client use it and we got some data from it, which I mean, I think it's, you probably know you're overheating, you know, with the device.
That's the hope, but
yeah. All the gadgets and stuff that are coming out and about.
And then the vests, have you seen those vests that people wore at like Western states?
The ice vests?
Yes.
Yes. And the headbands? And those things crack me up. What, Amanda, did you find it?
Yeah, it looks like Core. That's a brand, Core Sensor, but it also looks like Garmin makes one.
I didn't know about the Garmin one. Yeah, I think the Core one might be, well, I had a client that used it. I don't know if they're still in beta testing or not, but different devices to use and track. I think it's, again, probably pretty clear that your body's like, you know, your body's overheating. Okay. So we talked about cooling in the heat. I did have another question. Do you ever do from like a cramp? I know this, hopefully this doesn't give away your too truth and lie, but do you ever do anything for like cramp management, or do you ever experience cramping during long runs? And are you like someone who has like a McDonald's mustard packet in their thing or like...
So yes, I generally speaking, I stick to my target of sodium per hour unless I feel twinging. Usually it's my calf.
Mm.
If I start to feel twinging, like I'm going to cramp, I up my sodium. And historically I've done that with sodium pills.
Oh yeah.
But actually at Javelina last year, I over salted myself and then like GI distress.
Yeah.
You get into a race and you just forget, like, you know, I have timers set for my nutrition, but I'm like, did I take one tablet or two? And
right.
So anyway, I messed that up. And what I've switched back to, I used to use this in triathlon and I loved it. It's just called base hydration salt. And
yes.
So it's like salt in a little tube. And so you can kind of, and I think having that like mouth feel of how much salt is going in your body is important. Cause with the pill, you're like, okay, I swallowed it. So I've switched back to doing base and that helps me a lot.
That's great. Yeah. I have a handful of clients that use base. That makes me think, have you ever tried the salt stick, salt chews that they recently came out with?
No.
Yes. I just tested them this last weekend. They're not bad. And like talking about the mouthfeel part, it's like, you do get that, like they're salty, but then they have like a little bit of like a flavor of whatever, like lemon lime or raspberry or whatever. But the one thing is like, depending on your salt loss is, I think there's only 50 milligrams of sodium per chew. So like,
oh,
you know, if you have a 2000 milligram sodium loss per hour, I mean, you're going to be taking down loads of those things, but, potential option for some of our listeners. You mentioned the sodium goal. What is your sodium goal out of curiosity?
Yeah, I think this is kind of in the middle. And I say this, I haven't done a sodium test in a long time. And I think it would be nice to do those more frequently, but to your point, your sodium loss may change situationally. It may change season to season, in your training. And it probably even changed from, you know, going to Southern California to here where I am in Montana. So it's constantly changing. What I've found, I feel good at like 900 milligrams.
Nice. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that's what I shoot for.
That's great. And with this 100K, like, what are you thinking, like guesstimated finish time is?
Oh man. Well, you know, I'm competitive only with myself. I try to just let the competition of a race, like when I go to races, I just like root for everyone. I think it's so fun to be out there. And
that's awesome.
So I just root for everyone and I'm competitive with myself. And I went a 10:05 last year. So I'd love to beat that, maybe put some time into that, cut some time off of that. But I don't really know exactly what number that is.
Yeah. But just for our listeners' perspective, like sodium intake over the course of 10 hours, like that's pretty critical to stay up to date. It's not like you're out there for 90 minutes or something like that. So, and it's hot, 10 hours of hot. Not
very hot. It's 100 there this week. So I'm hoping it cools down a little bit, but yeah, the margins for error get smaller, I feel like, as a race gets longer. And it's been interesting because, you know, coming from a sprint swimming background where you never fueled anything and we had 90 minute practices and stuff, to then shifting into this world where like eating is everything and fueling everything. So I've learned a lot. I've done things the wrong way. And I think that's just kind of how it goes. You learn one race and one week and one session at a time. And just make little adjustments here and there.
For sure. For sure. I love that. And okay. So I want to be mindful of your time here. So I'll see what our listener questions were and see if we already answered some of these. Let's see. Did you experience any injuries while you were training and battling, managing the autoimmune disorder at first, which I think was that you had mentioned a stress fracture, but was that was before the red stuff, right?
Yeah. The stress fracture was back in high school. That I really just feel came from, I went from swimming my whole life, non-weight bearing, to this like very intense weight bearing activity. And I just hadn't prepped my body in a way to handle that. So really that's my only injury. I didn't experience anything, you know, bone health wise during that, but I will say, I almost would have rather experienced a bone stress injury than to have gone through a thyroid storm, because the recovery was longer than probably any body stress injury you could have done to yourself. So,
Oh man. And then let's see. The next one was, how did your training and nutrition change when you were pregnant? Which I think you kind of answered that. You said you're doing more strength, hiking, just moving every day, you were saying.
Yeah, I just kind of eliminated any performance goal. I mean, obviously the goal at that time in my life was just to make the healthiest little baby possible and to keep myself in a good, happy place. So I just tried to move every day. Strength, I felt like, was really important because you get a lot of that relaxing hormone. Things feel shifty. And it was just nice to kind of, I don't know, strength felt good during that time. But
yeah,
I think the gnarliest changes I had to make, because I wasn't really training when I was pregnant, but moving into a time where I was training postpartum and I was breastfeeding for 18 months, that I think severely changed how I needed to fuel and just reiterated more that I needed to just fuel often and all the time, because, you know, I would get on the treadmill for a 30-minute run and bonk. And it's like, I just am like burning so many calories, you know, and so that changed a lot. And I just had to snack more and eat more.
More snacks. Yeah, that's great.
A lot of this.
Yeah, that's awesome. And then let's see, the last question we have here is, how did you work on and how do you manage your relationship with food now?
Yeah, there are definitely times where especially in a workout, you look and you're like, oh my God, I just had, 80 grams of sugar or something. And that can like be really alarming and kind of send me back to this like weird place that I used to be in with food. But I think, I think that knowledge is power. I think the more that I learn about nutrition and fueling inside and outside of workouts, and the more that I see that application and how much better I feel, how much better I perform when I do fuel the proper way, the more it just enforces that I'm doing the right things. So I think it's kind of taken away the fear of food, which unfortunately I think I'm not going to say all of us, but a lot of us have fears of food, and it's so sad. We need that stuff.
Yeah, definitely. That's great. I love that answer. And let's see, before we tie things up and find out your two truths and lie, what is coming up for you after this 100K? Are you doing kind of a full postseason off, enjoying the holidays, or you got something for 2024 already on the calendar?
Yeah, a little bit of both. I'm going to take some downtime. I've got my uphill ski setup coming together for this year. So I'm going to do some uphill skiing. And just not run for a minute, but then I've got Canyons 100K in April. So And it's hard in Montana to train for spring races. So I'm hoping to do like some skiing and then shift into, a little bit of running in December and then kind of up things into January, February. But lean on that cross training a lot moving into this.
Awesome. Do you have a treadmill at your house or do you?
I do. And I am one of the weird ones because I love treadmills. I don't run on it for every run by any means, but I mean, I love having I think it's a nutrition thing. Now that we're voicing this, I don't like having to carry all of these things sometimes. And I think it's just nice having the ease of like, I can put 4 bottles there and just knock out a 20-mile run. I love doing that.
Yeah. Well, that's great. What kind of treadmill do you have?
It's a Proform, pretty basic model. It's nothing fancy. It has the iFit on it if you want. It does the trick. So awesome. I got Costco.
Nice. All right.
Yeah.
All right. So we will go ahead and go over your two truths and a lie. So let's see. You had said second degree black belt in an unknown type of martial arts. Uphill running is your favorite and pickle juice is your aid station go-to, I believe. Are those all accurate? Okay. Amanda and I thought the black belt was a lie. Which one is a lie?
The pickle juice. I hate pickle juice.
Oh no. Oh man. Wait. Okay. So tell us about this black belt situation.
Yeah. So the black belt, it was really one of my first sports. I don't practice martial arts anymore, but from the time I was like 5, my whole family did martial arts, like my mom, and my brother and sister. So it was a Korean form of martial arts called Hapkido. And we all became black belts together. So we did that for many, many years.
Wow. Good for you. That's great. And then of course I love uphill running. That one was a little obvious, but yeah, I love running in the mountains. So that's a truth.
Amazing. Good for you. Do you, I've talked to so many people, cyclists and runners, but I don't know if it was like an actual true Strava challenge. Maybe Amanda, you saw this as well, but I know with like the cyclists, they were trying to like accumulate, I think 1 million feet of elevation in a year. And I don't know if the runners do that as well. Is that something like, is there a Strava vert you try and like go for annually or anything?
I'm sure that exists. I am not on Strava anymore. But I guess I don't personally have uphill goals.
Yeah.
That also might be because most of my races are not really vert specific. So mm-hmm. maybe someday I'll have an uphill goal. But in the meantime, I just love running in the mountains and I have a lot of fun with it.
Awesome. That's great. I love that. Yeah. You want to enjoy it. Okay. Well, where can our listeners find you, follow you? Where can they do that?
Yeah, I'm pretty much just on Instagram and it's just my name, Rachel Northfleet. So I love to connect with new friends. I've made so many of my lifelong friends through Instagram, ironically. Cool. So you can find me there.
Love awesome. To. And then if anybody's out doing the 100K in Arizona, go say hi.
Yeah, if you're at Javelina, definitely come say hi. I'll be out there and
Drinking pickle juice.
Not drinking pickle juice.
That's funny. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Rachel. This has been so fun.
Yeah, thank you guys so much. This is so refreshing and an honor to be on the podcast. Thank you.
To stay up to date with the Nutritional Revolution recent activities, follow Nutritional Revolution on Instagram and Facebook and sign up to receive the Nutritional Revolution newsletters on the Nutritional Revolution website. If you guys enjoyed today's content, please hit subscribe below to stay up to date on the latest Nutritional Revolution posts. Have a healthy day.